Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
The Oscars are Sunday.
I've looked at clouds that way, but now they only block the sun.
So we're listening there to a scene from Coda. It's an award season darling this year. In this scene, spoiler alert, folks, Ruby, a high schooler from a Gloucester fishing family, is auditioning at the Berklee College of Music as her family sneaks into the auditorium. Ruby is the only hearing child in a deaf family and signs to them as she sings. Amelia Jones plays Ruby. Cambridge-born Sean Hedder directed, and the film is up for multiple awards at the Oscars this Sunday, including Best Picture, Adapted Screenplay, and first ever Best Actor in a Supporting Role nomination, who is deaf, for favorite Tony Kutzer. It is the latest in a long tradition of Boston going to the Oscars and not the only film where the city's well represented. So we've been thinking about that, and we thought, let's have Ty Burr come talk with us about it. Ty is the former Boston Globe film critic, author of the movie recommendation newsletter Ty Burr's Watch List. And let's talk about this history of Bay State films with the Oscars. Ty, welcome.
Oh, welcome. Thank you. Thanks for having me on. There's quite a history there.
There is. Okay, so let's start with right now, because I just watched Coda this past weekend. My husband and I enjoyed it. We have a 17-year-old son who we're telling you really should watch this. What was sort of your take on the film and its chances at this year's Oscar?
It has had a really remarkable journey. I first saw this movie at the Sundance Film Festival well over a year ago, and it was a sweet little crowd pleaser, maybe a little familiar in some of its storyline, but I loved the local flavor. It really felt like Gloucester. Loved the cast. And then it came out, and everybody who saw it kind of fell in love with it, but it still was kind of this little regional movie. And then it got hit with all these Oscars. And honestly, the way things have been going, it's won a lot of Guild Awards. It could very well win Best Picture.
All right. Well, so let's hear a little bit more of it for our audience.
Do you know what Bowie said about Bob Dylan? A voice like sand and glue. There are plenty of pretty voices with nothing to say. Do you have something to say?
I think so.
Good. Then I'll see you in class.
So there we have Mr. V, played by Eugenio Derbez, talking with Ruby, Amelia Jones, about kind of her fears, you know, her worry about being in class, starting to sing in public. I want to point out, Sean Hader is a Massachusetts-born director. She's not the only one up for an Oscar this year. But I want to stay in this space a little bit longer. This doesn't feel like that traditional, gritty, sort of Southie-talking, half-crime Boston movie that has been what people who are not from Boston think is the only movie you can tell about Boston.
No, thank the Lord we are finally moving beyond the Southie crime film, what I call the triple-decker movie.
I love it.
You know, and it was what really it had its roots in Friends of Eddie Coyle, but really when Good Will Hunting introduced Southie, it's not a crime film, but it introduced Southie as a sort of national idea, and then along come the Dennis Lehane movies, and that's what Boston is in movies for the next 20 years.
Yeah, so let's play a little bit of sound of both so we can take ourselves back. So this is Good Will Hunting, this is Matt Damon, this is the Apple scene.
See, the sad thing about a guy like you is in 50 years, you're going to start doing some thinking on your own, and you're going to come up with the fact that there are two certainties in life. One, don't do that. And two, you dropped $150,000 on a f***ing education you could have got for $1.50 in late charges at the public library.
Okay, and I had like 20 Lehane films I could have picked from here, but I picked a scene from Mystic River. We've got Jimmy Markham, played by Sean Penn, breaking into the scene of the crime as Sean Devine, Kevin Bacon, discovers the body of his daughter, Katie Markham, who's played by Emmy Rossum.
My daughter in there! Is she in there?
Hey!
Is she in there?
Hey, take it easy! That's the father. Hey, take it easy!
My daughter in there! He said, my daughter in there!
Okay, so I here's the reason I played these, right? You and I both just sort of disparaging the, what did you call it, the triple-decker movie.
I'm not disparaging them, but, you know, and there you have in that scene, you have strenuous emotions and strenuous Boston accents from out-of-towners.
That's true.
And there's the genre right there.
Right, okay, but at the same time, there's some good stuff.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, Mystic River's a good movie.
Mystic
good
River,
Will Hunting.
Gone Baby Gone is a terrific movie.
And I have sound from that, which we'll probably play in a little bit, too. So we are doing quality in that space historically.
Mm-hmm.
How are we starting to make room for these other kinds of films, the codas, or in this case, and I just want to point this out, Don't Look Up, which is not supposed to take place in Boston, but is actually shot well in Boston and is directed by Adam McKay, who spent his childhood in Worcester. So how are we moving into these more heady, less gritty, you know, kinds of films as a community?
There's a couple of things going on here. For one thing, there's the tax laws that changed in the Massachusetts Film Commission office have brought a wave of filmmaking in, so that now, it used to be if you wanted to shoot a movie cheaply that was set in New York, you went to Toronto. Well, now you can come to Boston.
Wow.
And in fact, we've seen a wave of films like Don't Look Up, which are shot in Boston, but not necessarily set in Boston. And so, which can be a kind of headbanging experience when you're sitting there watching a movie that's taking place, I don't know, in Cleveland.
And, Michigan. I think there's a bunch of Michigan that was actually shot in
Boston. And there's Franklin Park or something. But I, to my mind, this happened really when they changed the tax laws, when there were some union problems in earlier shoots that got ironed out. And I also think that the year that Spotlight and Black Mass both came out was a watershed year, because Black Mass was, you know, was a true Southie crime story, Boston crime story, but it also came out at the end of the cycle when it was kind of exhausted. And then Spotlight comes out the same year, and it is about a, well, it's about an institution, but it's about, it's, and it's also about crime, but in a very different way, showing different Boston people, but still feeling very inherently Boston.
And an Oscar winner for Best
Correct.
Picture. So let's play a little bit of Spotlight here. In this scene, Spotlight reporter Robbie Robinson, who's being played by Michael Keaton, which was kind of, by the way, the beginning of his rebirth in Hollywood as well, he interviews Sipe, Richard Jenkins, about the suspected scale of sexual abuse happening in the Catholic Church.
We think we have 13 priests in Boston that fit this pattern, which would be a very, very big story. Does that sound right to you in terms of scale?
No, not really, Robbie. Sounds low to me. My estimate suggests 6% act out sexually with minors.
6% of what?
6% of all priests.
Okay, so you have a Best Picture winner there.
Mm-hmm.
And as you say, we start to sort of redefine what it means to tell a Boston story.
Right.
Are there Boston stories that are sort of Oscar-worthy stories? And I don't want to be foolish about this, because there are many things that are Oscar-worthy stories. But that doesn't mean somebody's going to make an Oscar-worthy movie
Correct.
Out of them. But are there other Boston stories you're hoping are going to get told now?
Well, to my mind, the great Boston movie has yet to be made, and it will be about busing. It will be
really.
It will be about the busing struggle, tragedy, community, just uproar that happened in the early 70s, and that has been told in books. But I still feel that the city's not ready to, you know, when we're ready for it, we're long overdue. It should have been made a long time ago, but I still feel that a lot of people here don't want to see it.
So that's really interesting. Just to give context to our listeners who may not know. So we're talking about the court ruling 1974 creates the very unusual busing system that exists to this day in the city of Boston, caused tremendous racial tension and animus at the time. Very famous nonfiction book written about it, Common Ground.
Yep.
And, you know, I mean, we still talk about the legacy of that ruling.
Right.
In the city today.
Right. But it is still too sensitive to make a movie about. And we've also, you know, when we do see movies made on real events in Boston, and I'm thinking about the Marathon bombing, which resulted in two films, one of which felt very much, very slick, like it was taking advantage of the situation, one of which felt a little more heartfelt. We're very, very sensitive to depictions of how we live here and the clannishness of it. And a busing movie would bring that all out and would be, I think, very, very controversial, but I also think it needs to be made.
But we do love here, not but like I'm arguing with you, but as in I'm pivoting. we do make movies about our rascals and our scruffy characters. I'm thinking about, okay, and this is technically not Boston, it's Lawrence, but we're talking mm-hmm. greater Boston here. I'm thinking about The Fighter. Mark Wahlberg plays the main character Mickey Ward, Christian Bale, who right. won Best Supporting Actor.
Correct.
2010, plays Dickie Eklund. In this scene, we've got Mickey, who is Mark Wahlberg, arguing with his girlfriend, Charlene, Amy Adams, because mm-hmm. it's just a parade of Oscar mm-hmm. winners in this movie, and his family about his training arrangements as a boxer.
Right. I'm the one fighting, okay? Not you, not you, and not you. I know what I need.
And you need Dickie?
I want Dickie back. And I want you, Charlene, and I want O'Keefe. I want my family. What's wrong with that?
So here's what I'm thinking, right? We've got all of these actors who then sort of get into these Boston mm-hmm. films, and suddenly they get Oscar notice, right? So you've got a Casey Affleck like 12 times, right? Mm-hmm. You've got Mark Wahlberg in The Fighter. You've got Michael Keaton, who was an acclaimed actor, disappeared off the face of the earth, mm-hmm. comes back in spotlight. Boston movies seem to be a place to take people seriously. I mean, Matt Damon and Ben Affleck were kids,
yes.
and suddenly there they are in tuxes,
right.
winning the screenplay award and launching these huge careers. Do we have a potential here with the stories that we tell to give people, show people's chops in some kind of special or unique way?
I think the common ground you're sort of getting to here with all of these performances and all of these movies is that they go to a sense of regional authenticity. They feel real. They feel gritty. They feel rooted in something actual. That becomes a metaphor for no matter where you're watching it in the country, you feel like you're watching something rooted. And actors respond to roles like that. My God, they don't come along that often. What I do think that is interesting is that the history of Boston movies is so often a working class history. Mm. And the one movie we haven't talked about, it's an older one, but it's still one of my favorite Boston movies. And ironically, most of it was shot in New York, is The Verdict.
Yay!
The Oscar that Paul Newman should have won for playing a failed Boston lawyer who gets one, and based on an actual malpractice case. So that's rooted in you know, Boston institutional reality.
Now, he did win eventually an Oscar, just not for this, right?
Yes, correct. He won for The Color of Money, the
right,
Scorsese film.
Which was a little bit later. All right, so yeah. We have some sound from this. 1982, The Verdict, Paul Newman is Frank Galvin, down on his luck lawyer, this malpractice case that you're talking about involving a young woman who's left in a coma after giving birth at a Catholic hospital. Here, Frank is turning down a significant settlement offered by the hospital.
People who should care for her are doctors. I mean, you and me. Have been bought off to look the other way.
All right, so I unabashed fan of this movie.
Oh, who isn't?
And it holds. Like, you can go back and watch this film today. It doesn't feel anachronistic. He doesn't try to do a bad accent. You talked about treasuring regional authenticity. We have some problems with that.
Yes, we do.
He doesn't try to do any of that. Mm-hmm. It's just a great performance and a great story mm-hmm. that is about something that happened here.
Right.
Yeah. Others like that you really cherish.
Directed by a great New York filmmaker, Sidney Lumet. So what does that tell you?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Any other films that you really cherish that either got the nod or got the snub, from the awards?
Oh, I'm a big fan of Next Stop Wonderland. It's a little indie movie.
Yep.
Have you seen it?
I have.
With Hope Davis, and I'm blanking on the name of the actor.
Me too.
About two Boston souls that cross paths almost.
Yeah.
And that gives you a sense of, for lack of a better word, outer borough Boston that you rarely, rarely see outside of, you know, movie Southie.
Yeah. And that's literally a reference to Wonderland Tea Station.
Correct.
All right. So let's play a little bit of a lightning round. Oscars are this Sunday night. You wrote a long blog post, which was really fun to read.
Good.
About all kinds of predictions. So what's going to win 2022 Best Film?
I actually think Coda will. It, like I said, it's won a bunch of Guild Awards. I think it is in a very, very rough year. After a bunch of very, very rough years, here's this sweet little movie that's maybe a little soft to chew on, but it makes you feel good. In Troy Kotsur, it has a fantastic supporting role.
Fantastic performance.
The performances all across the board are really enjoyable. It feels good in part because it is a little familiar. Power of the Dog, it was sort of held out as, oh yeah, this is going to run away with the Oscars, but I feel like its momentum has passed. I also do wonder if West Side Story, which is a remake I think is a fantastic film, now that it's on demand, more and more people and more Academy voters are seeing it, which they didn't in theaters, it might actually pull an upset. But I think it's going to be Coda.
So, and just for folks, Steven Spielberg did that remake of West Side Story, the 1950s musical. Okay, almost out of time, I do want to ask you, if Troy Kotsur wins, mm-hmm. it will be the first time, it's the first nomination of a deaf actor in Best Supporting Category. Do you think he'll win?
Yes, I do. I think, again, he's won the run-up awards. There's such a good feeling about his performance, about him. I'm looking forward to his acceptance speech because it'll probably be a heart terror. And just the feeling around it is that, yeah, it's his year. It's his
time.
Yeah.
All right. Ty Burr is a former film critic for the Boston Globe and author of the movie recommendation newsletter, Ty Burr's Watch List. Fun to have you in. Thanks so much,
Tiziana.
All right, we close today with a programming note, folks. I want to remind you that we are stepping back on Fridays for the next several weeks while we work on a special project. I'm going to have more to tell you about that soon, and I'm really looking forward to doing that when I can. But in the meantime, tomorrow you can enjoy a bonus episode of Fresh Air. And then we'll be back with you on Monday for more Radio Boston. Make sure you come back and join us at 3. I'm Tiziana Deering. Thanks for listening.